before Hannah Brown, long before Tessa Snart, that was John Lennon, starting over 1980. Oh well, so it goes. And we are starting over, we're starting over with the second part of the Midweek Drive after the news, continuing in our own merry little way to happiness, joy and wit and wisdom. Isn't that right, Hannah Brown?
Of course, as always.
Excellent. Marvellous. And isn't that right, Tessa Snart?
It is.
So we'll go to the Tiki Lounge in a few moments with Merle Fankhauser, who has recently done a Tiki Lounge album live from the whole system. So getting into the Hawaiian tropical style to take us around. Yes,
I like that.
Exactly. It's what we need. It's what the world needs.
It really does.
Bring out the grass skirts. Bring out the dancing girls. Bring out the dancing boys. Take it away.
Exotic drinks we'd like you to try. Dance away the night at the Tiki Lounge. The sounds of Martin Denny fill.
I'm just so tempted to do a West Indian accent. No, I won't. I just can't. No, it's not right. It will be wrong, incorrect. But it's great. It's the Tiki Lounge. It's the music that Fuzz Aldrin can probably dance to on her recovery
yes.
to good health. It's the music that Phil Leonis and Lily Holloman would want to dance to. It's the music that all good Level 3 students...
We all want to dance to
the Tiki Lounge. We've got Merle Fankhauser with us. Merle, how are you, Merle?
Good day. It's a wonderful day here on the central coast of California. Thank you, Alex, for having me on again.
It's a genuine delight because it was a matter of a week ago, Merrill, when I was sitting in my office with Tessa Snott talking about the wonderful thing that she's doing called a dissertation. It's
yes.
a mere 10,000 words of material that she's developing. Curiously, on the music industry, and your name came up because I said, I'm sure Merrill Fankhauser would be delighted to share some of the thoughts of how he's actually got connected with social media, or not, as the case may be. In fact, Merrill, if it's okay with you, we'll do our usual Wikipedia check here, because, you know, as people are aware, you shouldn't use Wikipedia as a sole source. It's not good. It's not fact-checked, etc. But in this instance, we can check with the authenticator. We can authenticate as we go along. So just so opening lines, Merrill, from your Wikipedia entry. First of all, is your middle name Wayne?
Correct.
Hey.
Oh, there we go.
This is good.
That's right. So
it's Merrill Wayne Fankhauser. Now, are you, as well as being an American singer, are you also a songwriter and guitarist?
This is correct.
Hey.
Oh.
Two for two. This is good. And did you include in your repertoire, or indeed with your bands, such bands as Merrill and the Exiles, HMS Bounty, the Fankhauser Cassidy Band, and MU, or Mew, effectively.
Moo, yeah.
Moo, exactly. Finally, this is looking good, and I think I know the answer to this because we talked about Merrill's debut on the production a couple of weeks ago. In fact, it was actually last year when Merrill made his debut. 2017. Not quite. It's December.
Well,
everything is relative.
Yeah.
Time is just an illusion. Let's face it. Little sort of fun fact for both Hannah and Tessa to think about. And indeed, if you're in your 20s, in a matter of 400,000 hours, you'll be in your 80s. I just want to raise that up there.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
I think I just saw my life flash by.
it's important, you know, just to make the best of that. Or 22,000 days. Okay, either of those two things. You know, sort of put you
still quite a lot. Days.
Yeah.
I and Merrill probably will not be here unless we've downloaded our consciousness into a different world. It's a possibility. And finally, as I say, you obviously later released music under the group name Fapadocaly, even though that group never actually existed.
Now, that isn't true.
Hey, yeah, right.
Yes, that group did exist, and it was around 1967, when I moved back from the high desert over here to the central coast, and I formed a group with Bill Dodd, who actually had taken my place in the Impacts when I left them, guitar player, and Dick Lee, and John Oliver, who was the bass player in the Impacts. We formed a band. And I've been calling the band Merrill and the Exiles when we lived in the desert and had some singles put out under that name. And then, you know, it was around the Summer of Love and all the new consciousness was happening. And I said, Merrill and the Exiles, that sounds too much like a 50s band. Let's come up with something a little more psychedelic sounding. So I sat down with a pencil and paper, and I took the first two letters of the last name of each person in the band at the time, F.A. for Fankhauser, and we had a bass player at the time whose last name was Parrish, so I took P.A.R., and then D.O. for Bill Dodd, and the drummer's name was Dick Lee, and I came up with Fapadocaly. And they all looked at me, and the drummer went, brilliant. So when Glenn Records called me up and said we had all these tunes on the shelf in his studio, and he was going to issue an album, what were we calling the band now? And when I told him Fapadocaly, he went, what? How in the blazes do you spell that? So that's the whole thing of Fapadocaly, and we played at a nightclub in Pismo Beach for almost a year, and then Bill Dodd and I and another bass player and drummer moved to L.A. and formed HMS Bounty, and I never thought anything else about the Fapadocaly album, but now as we know, it's you know, three of the songs on there have jumped back into the limelight.
Absolutely.
Tomorrow's Girl, that was on the Grammy-nominated Rhino box set, Where the Action Is, L.A. Nuggets, 1965 and 68. And then Thomas Pynchon wrote the book Inherent Vice, which they made a movie of, and he mentions the group and the tune Supermarket, the last tune on Fapper Dockley, in his book. And now we have Lila, the title tune from the Fapper Dockley album, coming out in the movie Chappaquiddick in April. So for an album that I really just kind of, you know, bypassed and went on to the next project, it's doing pretty well.
Well, before we actually hand over the interviewing reins to Tessa to grill you, not in a sort of serious way, but I sort of quiz a few questions about various other things, Hannah, do you think the world and yourself is ready for Fapper Dockley and Lila?
I think we are. I think it's time we reintroduce.
The time is ready
to
actually work through that. Merle, would you be kind enough to introduce your band, Fapper Dockley? They do exist. Take that, Wikipedia. You were wrong, okay? Just want to put that correct straight away.
Well, one more thing I'd like to say, Alex, that I noticed was wrong recently. They said that my old bandmate, Jeff Cotton, had passed away of cancer. And that is not true at all. And we don't know how this rumor got started on the internet, but it spread everywhere. And people were sending me condolences on Facebook and everything. And he is very much still alive, living in Bellingham, Washington. But his beautiful Chinese-Hawaiian wife passed away almost a year ago of cancer. So maybe somehow they got that confused. But I'm doing an interview today with Shindig Magazine. They also think that Jeff Cotton has passed away. But just for the record, he's still very much alive.
You see, this, Merrill, is where we can actually put a full stop to that whole notion of fake news.
Yes.
That even
even
Pope Francis said it all started when Eve was tempted with the apple. Anyway, without any further ado, stay with us, Merrill, if you'd be kind enough to do so, because we've got 3 minutes, 20 seconds of Fapper Dockley and Lila.
Wonderful.
She came, she brought me.
going back in time, even as we speak, even though I can't remember the 60s, because obviously I wasn't there. Moving on, Tessa, would you like to quiz one of the key folk of Fabadockley and the awesome Merle Fankhauser about life, the use of social media, anything, really? You've got 3 or 4
yes,
minutes.
I'm going to talk about social media. This is something I'm covering in my dissertation, and you might be able to help. What are your thoughts on how the industry, in terms of getting your music out there, how it's changed now social media is here? How do you promote your music? Do you go through a PR or do you do it yourself? And how has this changed since you first began making music?
Yes, Tess, it has changed in good ways and in not so good ways, because it's easier for people to take something off the internet and just, you know, grab it for nothing and pass it on. But in the good ways, all of my stuff comes out on a record company, whether it be, you know, in Europe or the United States, or I have things in Japan and Canada. I work closely with a record company on each release. And like the new Tiki Lounge Live album, they're in Los Angeles. They're promoting it, sending out to radio and their distributors, and putting it for sale on the internet. And then I do my little bit where I take a few MP3s off of songs that are kind of my personal picks, and I send them. I have a couple hundred DJs that stay in contact with me regularly, so I'll let them know about this new release and send them some MP3s. And just in the last week and a half since the Tiki Lounge Live album came out, myself, I've already got it on about 55 stations in Europe and the United States, and it's too soon to get a report from the record company. The other thing I can tell you is that in the old days, say in the 70s and into the 80s, to negotiate a record deal with, say, a label in the UK, they would write me or phone me, and then it would go back and forth a few weeks mailing contracts and signing them. Then when the contracts are signed, I'd get the master tapes ready, send those to them, and then the artwork. And by the time you made all of the negotiations and they gave you some initial front money, it could take a couple of months. And now with the internet, we can send the contracts through the internet email, and it can be negotiated in a couple of days. And then they can wire the money into the bank, and then I can send them via email all of the photographs and artwork and, credits that they need, and finalize the whole thing in probably 2 weeks or less, unless there's something else more that they need in the way of photographs. So it's sped that up quite a bit. But like I tell all these young bands that I've helped a lot and helped record and get their stuff out, you still need a record company, you know, to really do the industry promotion and get it out there. Because a lot of bands think, oh, if I put my stuff up at Pandora or CD Baby, I'm going to have an overnight hit, and they all want instant gratification. And it doesn't come that quick, you know. You need, if you want things to be in stores, you need a record company, and they can do so many more things that, a musician can't do on his own. And not only that, if you're, you know, playing gigs, and as I am, doing radio and TV, you don't have as much time to sit down at the computer and do it all. So I hope I've answered some of your questions.
No, definitely. That was very interesting. So you definitely think that the record company still has a big part to play, even though artists can do a lot on their own these days with the internet and social media. You think they still play a big part?
Yeah, because it's so hard just to completely market it and make it available for sales yourself just on the internet, because for one thing, if you're an unknown group like a lot of these young groups, they may not type your name in or Google your name if they don't know it, and how are they going to find you? And you know, when you have a record company also sending it to magazines and you know, other DJs, you know, it really helps. There's still a place, you know, for that. And then some young groups, they tell me, oh, nobody's buying CDs anymore. And I said, well, I beg to differ with you. You know, the Rhino box set, for instance, made over $1 million, and that was a 4-CD set. And I said, I sell quite a few CDs on my own, just off of the stage, which is one thing they can do, but the record company still far surpasses anything I could do on my own, even having a somewhat of a name as I do. So, you know, it's worth the time to try to send the material to record companies, and just, you got to do everything you can. A real case in point about the other things that could be negative about having your material on the internet, that somebody just posts up there, you know, a band or something. I did an in-store promotion for my Return to Moo album back in, oh gosh, what was it, 2002 or something. And we performed in the store, and then they had the album there for sale. Well, people were in line afterwards having me sign their CDs, and a young college student came up, and he had a homemade disc, said the best of Merle and the Impacts, my early 60s surf band. And I said, oh, where did you get this? And it didn't really have a label. It was just written on there with a Sharpie. And he says, oh, a guy in my dorm is making them and selling them to everybody for $10 each. And I went, uh-oh, this is a problem, because there's no way, you know, that you may not know of this, and no way to stop it. So they're cutting out the songwriter and the artist and even the record company.
Okay, well, thank you.
Extraordinary.
Yeah, all very interesting.
That's half the chapter of
Hope I didn't babble on too long.
Merle,
that's brilliant. Thank
you. It's been fantastic. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the program today? Has it been okay for you, sir?
Yes.
Good. That's what we like to hear. So can we look forward to connecting with you again in the not-too-distant future and hearing more of your fabulous music from the Tiki Lounge?
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure Tess will want to actually interview you externally to find out more
details.
Yes,
you have a lot of information. It's been great.
Very useful.
Lovely stuff. Listening to you.
Will you return, Merle?
Yes, I will, Alex. I always enjoy talking to you, and I have so many friends and fans in England, and, you know, friends in Cornwall, and I'm a big fan of the Doc Martin TV show, and I want to go there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
If you're in California, clearly Doc Martin transcends boundaries, probably more so than Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Anyway, more to come from Merle in the near future, but in the very near future, we're back with Larry Nemechek.
I was a highwayman. Along the coach roads I did ride, with sword and pistol by my side. Many a young maid lost her baubles to my trade. Many a soldier shed his lifeblood on my blade. The bastards hung me in the spring of 25, but I am still alive.
sailor. I was born upon the tide. With the sea I did abide. I sailed a schooner around the Horn of Mexico. I went aloft to furl the mainsail in a blow. And when the yards broke off, they said that I got killed. But I'm living still. I was a dam builder across a river deep and wide, where steel and water did collide. A place called Boulder on the Wild Colorado. I slipped and fell into the wet concrete below. They buried me in that gray tomb that knows no sound. But I'm still around. I'll always be around, around and around and around and around. I fly a starship across the universe divide. And when I reach the other side, I'll find a place to rest my spirit if I can. Perhaps I may become a highwayman again. Or I may simply be a single drop of rain. But I will remain. I'll be back again and again and again.
And you will keep coming back again and again and again and again, because just like a mycelial network, you permeate the cosmos.
Hey, this is Larry Nemechek, Dr. Trek, and you're listening to the Midweek Drive.
Yay, Larry! Yay! Exactly. Already, Larry, although I haven't published this on Facebook as yet, because frankly, I'm a male, I can't multitask, so just excuse me on this. We've got photographs of Hannah and Tessa posing with photographs of yourself. Big photographs of Larry Nemechek and, you know, copies of the Star Trek official magazine with your little teeny photograph in there and all sorts of other sort of lines from that. So we're spreading the word, much as I was delighted you shared you shared with us the awesomeness of the new podcast. It's 15 minutes worth of, I mean, I even put a comment on the Facebook page of this. I don't know if you've seen it, Larry, but, you know, it's only 900 seconds of audio awesomeness. The Trek Files, sponsored actually by Fine Souls, responsible for the Star Trek Starship compilation. That's Eagle Moss Publications. Mm-hmm. And in fact, on my new, well, I'd say new, relatively new, in my new office, Tessa can attest to this, okay. I have Eagle Moss models of the Voyager,
yes.
The Enterprise, both Enterprise D and Classic Series Enterprise D.
Yes.
So there we are. And I can listen to the podcast
as well.
I'm
so shocked. I'm shocked to find out that Starship collecting is going on here, Alex.
yeah, well, you know, there you go. It just goes to show that we're celebrating all the best things. Now, this is all good. And actually, before we go into Arthur Weingarten's slightly searing views of the man, let's face it, Arthur was not impressed when I gave him the believability test or the seven steps for writers that were also sort of there. Would you like to share with us, Larry, what the whole essence of this podcast is and how somebody like Hannah, for instance, who's stressed with exams, journalism things and so on, she's every so often tempted to go down a Trek route, hasn't quite kind of got the... Why actually the Trek Files on Facebook, of course, can actually be a whole turning point in her life as a human being, let alone a journalism graduate to be.
Oh, well, a journalism graduate to be. The Trek Files is a wonderfully simple idea. It's basically going into some of Gene Roddenberry, the man who created Star Trek, some of his files from his family. That aren't even out to university archives yet. And finding select ones that shed a little more light on either a bit of Trek history or a bit of how timeless Star Trek can be, because it might be a document from the 60s or 70s or 80s at some evolutionary point in Star Trek's life, when it's high or when it's low or when it's trying to find its way, which also may be mirroring Gene's life, and they still speak to us about media today, or they speak to us about the state of Star Trek, or my gosh, even the world. And that was amazing, whether it's like a little letter to a fan or some celebrity letter to him or some huge memo or script, you know, some movie pitch or some development notice. I mean, we have all kinds of things, big and small, and we pull them out. And I say we, meaning myself and a guest, for just 15 minutes, so it's very bite-sized. But hopefully it's a nugget for both old-time fans, to people who have been around the Star Trek block for 30 or 40 years, and also for brand-new fans. And I just had a lot of fun doing it. And, yes, the reaction to the promotion ahead of time and the reaction to the first episode has been just like yours, Alex. It's been wonderful. So yeah, I hope everybody finds something there, and I hope people are going to surprise me. I hear little testimonials from people saying, "Oh my gosh, this did change my world as a soon to be journalism grad."
It certainly opens up a whole, not only as an archive for how certain aspects of television history actually operated. And it was interesting, Arthur Weingarten, who's written for The Wild Wild West, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., The Addams Family, etc., mm-hmm. etc. And he kind of, I think it's fair to say, Tessa, he was not impressed
He wasn't.
He sort of said, if somebody had actually given him his seven steps to writing, the seven rules for writing, including the stop worrying about not being a scientist, how many cowboys, police officers and doctors wrote westerns, detective and hospital shows, he would have been insulted. Now, I can only say this is because he's a good friend of Harlan Ellison's. So, and we know what Harlan, I mean, there is a case, I think it's fair to say, Larry, without going too deeply into the rind of things, but basically Harlan and Gene, it was a love-hate relationship, wasn't it, really?
I want to say there's a guy that would never go anywhere near Star Trek. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes, a complicated relationship. Yeah.
Yeah.
But fascinating. There's been a whole book now written. He and the people who contributed material have done a whole book about the City on the Edge of Forever's history. So
that's my thing. Tessa.
I was going to say, who's your favourite guest been so far, if you can pick
just
a favourite?
One show. There's just been one
show. Oh, there's
so
only
far.
Been one so far. Oh, well, you can only pick one then.
Well, Austin, let me reveal something, you guys. We've done several shows. There are several shows in the can. But,
okay.
And each one being 15 minutes, uh-huh. I'm able to have a guest on for several episodes.
So I've had a round of
three guests so far. John Champion, who is the co-producer on the show, but also co-hosts Mission Log and is a knowledgeable Trek guy in his right. Dave Rossi, who was a fanboy who became a tour guide and then a page for Mary, an assistant for Mary Howard, and then Rick Berman on all the Berman era, and wound up as an associate producer on Enterprise, and worked on the original series Blu-ray remaster project, and is a great, great guy and a lot of fun. He's a good talker and loves his Trek and knows the business. And the name you might have heard of, Alex, a lady by the name of Dorothy Fontana.
Whoa.
Oh.
Who? The.
Yes.
Well, I mean, listen.
Dorothy, you tell them.
She had to actually use the initials DC Fontana because of the bias against female writers back in the 60s. She was responsible for so many classic, epic Star Trek themes, characterizations, including, of course, and this is a question I've been just aching to put to Larry Nemechek, this side of paradise. This side of paradise, the spores. The whole connection with that. Finally, we're back into spores. We've got John Stamets' book on mycelial technology. We've got a whole new thing to actually work on when it comes to spore technology and so on. And no spoilers, but I have to say, the twist in terms of Star Trek Discovery, even though Phil Leonis has claimed on Chilpak Hollywood, and probably will claim again if he's on in a few moments, that he predicted the Mirror Universe. He actually did predict that. The twist that we actually get that's also there in terms of the question that was being asked by a lot of Trek fans, but a Star Trek captain wouldn't behave like that. Whoa. Whoa. And whoa again.
Wow. I hate to break it to your guest coming or your friend there, but he's not the only one who predicted
We have to.
You know, Mirror Universe and Mirror Lorca.
Yeah. It's okay. We know there's a kind of love hate. I mean, Phil Lynas watched Trek with his father back in the day. He was growing up, but you know, at the end of the day, he's more X-Files than that. Ultimately, his heart's, you know, it's a lie. We'll find out about that. But, I mean, the series is going from strength to strength. It's been commissioned for a second season. It's working through on that basis. Hannah's yet to start watching. Would you say that Star Trek Discovery, for somebody like Hannah, who's still dipping the toe in, would be a good introductory gateway set up to the whole 50-plus years of Star Trek joy?
I would say it would be a bit of a twisted entrance, but yeah. One that would feel at home. It's made today, so if you've watched Doctor Who or Game of Thrones or anything like that, it very much feels a product of today, a child of today. So, yes, I would.
Yeah. We've just heard that actually it'll be Lily Holloman as opposed to Phil Lynas we're speaking
okay.
to. That's because Phil's going to be joining us tomorrow morning.
Right.
His pace is sort of working there. Okay. Hopefully we've actually got Lily's telephone number, otherwise who knows what could happen in a few moments. But that's okay. So, Hannah, any questions? I mean, that's a bit of a production meeting live on air. Any questions you'd like to put to the awesome Larry Nemechek, given that you've obviously taken a photograph with yourself holding his photograph, holding a photograph of Larry in a kind of iconographic thing. It's wonderful.
Pointing the finger. So yeah.
Sorry, Larry, did I actually explain who DC Fontana was effectively, though? I mean, a real major contributor to the original series.
Well, and where she started out as an assistant too, grew on to write, and then was able to fulfill that.
And did extremely well and responsible, as I said, for many of what I could really regard. And let's not forget her contributions to Star Trek The Next Generation as well.
I was going to say, so much Spock and Vulcan and Spock's family and Vulcan is Dorothy Fontana. And then she was the basically the showrunner for the animated series.
Yep.
And then was in the original when Gene got his little old gang together to launch Next Generation. She wrote the pilot for Next Generation.
No DC Fontana, probably unlikely to have had Q manifesting in his way of a divine being portrayed by John DeLancey. Hannah, over to you.
Well, I was wondering, because we've talked a lot about getting me into Star Trek.
And it's a mission I've been working on.
I will try.
For the last 2.5 years.
I will try.
And even when you graduate, not in a scary way, I will continue nudging you in that direction.
You just send me gifts of Star Trek over Facebook.
Star Trek is a gift in an infinite, diverse, and infinitely combinating way.
Okay. Well, what I was wondering, Larry, is obviously now you are Dr. Trek, but how did you originally get into Star Trek yourself?
Well, I was I've always been a history buff, history fan, and when I was a little kid, I was a big NASA, space buff kid, had posters and everything on my wall. So that's where and a little science fiction, but not an overtly science fiction person, open to it, but ultimately the blame goes back to my ninth grade science teacher who, long story short, one day with some other kids, basically the fact came out that I had not watched Star Trek, and she basically shamed me into it. She was like, oh, Larry, I can't believe you don't watch Star Trek. And we were in this was the rerun time of the original series, so like every day after school, one of our local stations had it on after school. So it was very easy to go home and get hooked very quickly. And the animated's run Saturday morning then, too. So I actually watched. I remember thinking that it would make more sense. I knew it was a sci-fi show with that guy with the ears, even though I was a kid. And I watched the cartoon a couple of times before I watched the dailies. But I just loved the universe. I just loved that you could crawl into your television and there was a whole universe there. Before that was a buzzword, and everyone talked about world building, and cinematic universes. Star Trek invented all that, or like pioneered that idea, but that was what it was. And then all the hopeful future optimism and the characters and the storytelling and all that came. But I just love the fact there was this unified world that was the same week to week, and they didn't mess up, and you could count on it mostly to be, all the little things. I remember when I first bought my first The Making of Star Trek book, and I had arguments with a couple of my friends, and I read it, and I was like, I knew it. I knew that the badges on the shirts matched the shirt color. I mean, from that simple start,
Great mushrooms.
Like I said,
will glow. Yeah. In case you're wondering why I'm kind of pushing Paul Stamets' text, Mycelium Running, How Mushrooms Can Help Save the World. It's quite a fascinating read, and I acknowledge the sort of work with that.
Uh-huh.
Does tie in with this whole notion that maybe It's not just a case of perspective. We are genuinely fun guys. I'm sorry, I couldn't resist it. I know. just had to roll with it. And, you know, if...
You know, of all the weeks and months you've had me on the show, I think that's just going to do it for me, Alex.
It's the final straw.
That's the capper. That's the capper.
Whoa. Anyway, you see, obviously, I've been overexposed to Matt on the After Track sort of show, when I still maintain, actually, Larry, you should be hosting that, especially now I've heard your podcast, which is available. Go to Facebook, check out all the marvellous things in terms of the Trek files, which are awesome. So, Tessa, last two questions for Larry Nemeczek, please.
Have you had an interesting telephonic link with us this evening?
Exceptionally interesting today, yes.
As always. And will you be joining us again on the show sometime soon?
Oh, as soon as you'll have me mycelial my way in, I will.
Well, I mean, certainly allowing for the fact that we're coming up to season finale time, and I don't know if you saw Jonathan Frakes on the whole thing. I think he was on good form. We will talk more about that in a matter of weeks. So Richard Edwards from SFX Magazine joins us next week. Larry Nemeczek will return. Lily Holliman's up very shortly because Phil has already sent her number across, which is great. So, Larry Nemeczek, we salute you. I think we've done very well not to actually give any real spoilers away re-Star Trek Discovery. It'll happen, but, you know, certainly it gets better and better, which is a nice series. Favourite character, incidentally, out of Star Trek Discovery, Larry? Any particular favourite one?
Oh my gosh. I like all the Saru. There's so many. I keep waiting to see who I'm seeing Mirror and who I'm seeing Prime before I make the final.
And I'm thinking very much a fan of Ensign Tilly and Saru. Yes, I echo both those. Good folk, marvellous stuff. And who could forget Michael Burnham, of course. Larry Nemeczek, live long and prosper for now.
Trek well.
The stars are in position, all will be revealed. But I know that until then, unless the stars surrender, all will be concealed. And now the snow is falling. dream that I was walking, and the two of us were talking of all life's mystery. The words that flow between friends, winding streams without end, I wanted you to see. But it can seem surprising when you find yourself alone. And now the dark is rising, and a brand new moon is born. I always dreamed
And now, star of stage and screen, a lover of mystery, and an international citizen of the world, this is Lily Holloman.
From the Tiki Lounge through Larry Nemechek and Star Trek Discovery to the awesomeness that is the current keeper of our best friend, she who is called Fuzz Aldrin, it's Lily Holloman. How are you, Lily?
Hello!
Excellent. Now, it's crazy to actually ask, have you been listening to the programme? Because she won't have had time to do that, because clearly you've been busy with the breakfast show. And, yes. Shock news, not only did Larry reveal to me a little sneak peek that the last episode of Star Trek Discovery is the first ever episode directed by an African-American female director, but Fuzz Aldrin was appearing at the Los Angeles Breakfast Club a matter of an hour or so ago.
Yeah. I bet she got a lot of attention.
Whoa. Did she rip out her esophageal feeding tube again? Or was that just a case of, I need to have some more bonus scenarios. Let's do this. In the words of Phil Lynas, of course, I was going to say Rocky-esque Sylvester Stallone moment. But no, he was actually referring to Denzel Washington. I get them confused so easily, Lily, as you'll appreciate, in the Academy Awards season. Is it Denzel?
Absolutely.
Is
Me
it
too.
Sylvester? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're walking down Sunset Boulevard and you're thinking, is that Sylvester or is that Denzel? I don't know. Anyway, moving on, you've obviously been working wonders with the GoFundMe campaign, and we celebrate everybody who's contributed to that, which is great. I think in our own way, I mean, Tessa, you've shared.
Yeah, thank you so much.
I've been trying.
So exactly, every little helps, etc. And
it really has helped, and Phil and Fuzz and I appreciate your help so much. She's getting so much better, and it's all because of the support throughout the world
for
this little magical being.
Have you looked at her latest updates on Facebook?
I've been following all on Instagram.
Well.
And Phil's been like posting updates with little cute pictures. Yeah. I do keep checking. Like sometimes I have gone on Instagram, especially just to see.
Fundamentally,
how
exactly.
Yeah.
You know, we all want to know the progress.
Exactly. I mean, it's got that echo of.
I'm so glad. Thank you. She's she's getting better and better every day. We went to the vet just for a routine checkup yesterday, and the vet was beaming. She was so proud of the progress Buzz has made. She just got completely affected. Every part of her body got sick, either from pneumonia or something called toxoplasmosis, but she just really took a huge hit on this, but her lungs are completely clear now. Her lungs look spectacular, and she was on oxygen for so long, so that's a huge milestone.
Using my I was going to say, just briefly, Lily, using my Lambda-trained skills here, I'll attempt to actually incarnate, obviously getting in touch with my feline female capacity here, a Fuzz Aldrin news update from January 18th. My people and I spent 12 hours at Access Speciality Animal Hospitals yesterday because my esophageal feeding tube came out, so I had to be sedated and undergo the procedure again. Grrr. I'm still not eating on my own. I still get dizzy and fall down. I am a fighter, though, and as you can see, I have bounced back fine at home today. Please, help my people, help me. visit gofundme.com/save-fuzzaldrin. Meow.
I didn't know Fuzz was British.
Yeah. No, I didn't notice that. Yeah, well, you see, this is it. I mean, it's a little known fact that actually Egyptian-British, that's why effectively when they found Fuzz as a rescue kitten, something that was only revealed through the cosmos to ourselves, you see. So.
Yeah. What a lovely photo that is. I've got to say, all the photos are very good quality. Yeah.
Very good.
Thank you. Phil and I, we have a lot. We have to restrain ourselves in sharing.
Exactly. You can't be Fuzz Aldrin out, literally, from that perspective.
Look at that one.
It's just, you know, dear me.
He's all eyes. Fuzz has got lovely eyes.
She has.
She does. She just gets you with those eyes.
Well, the eyes all time.
Everybody at the hospital loves her.
It's Lily. Sorry, I was very much. Lily holding Fuzz from that point of view. Genius is all I can say.
So you guys are all on Team Fuzz. Thank you for being on Team Fuzz.
Look, if we're Midwick drivets, as you know, Lily wants a Midwick driver, always a Midwick drivet. Yeah. We do our best. We've even had, you know, Midwick drivets from times past, like Jodie Orton. I don't know. Katie Grimerson even has been supporting this whole thing. So that's just good news.
Good.
If Katie supports it, then all's well. Penny, of course. Happy birthday, Penny Evans. She had her birthday.
Happy birthday, Penny.
Wondrous.
Thank you to Penny, too, for everything.
Okay, so the big question that was raised earlier, I think, Hannah, you raised it, is Fuzz going to come over to Britain when Phil might be arriving? I said, don't be silly. You've got quarantine rules and regulations. You can't have that. What about yourself, Lily? Are you going to cross the Atlantic, or is it a case of, don't be silly, I've got to look after Fuzz, or Fuzz has got looked after me? I mean, what's the situation now with this kind of off-talked about? Because, you know, we're now approaching the end of January. So if we're talking March, we're talking pretty darn close. What's happening?
I know. I believe it's going to be a very romantic trip between Phil and Dean solo.
Love. Bromance.
A bromance.
Amazing.
Yes.
Well, you know, what can I say? I will say this. If you really pressed me, I'd probably say that this week and this week alone, I preferred Larry Nemechek's Star Trek podcast to Dean and Phil's agonizing incarnation of Dean Haglund's what he actually did with respect to surgery on his knee. That's all I will say, you know. I'm just putting that out there. I would have said it, Lily, and I might indeed say it tomorrow morning, our time, or midnight your time, when we have the weather forecast from Los Angeles from Phil Leonis. By the way, Lily, feel free to actually assist him in his predictions for the Academy Awards. I sent over the list yesterday, so hopefully in the Leonis Fitzwilliams Challenge, the now annual battle that we actually have here, Richard's already given me his predictions. We await the American entry. Freddie King, because last year he won by 1 point, did Phil? A single point. And of course, he did say that actually, well, it's okay, it's only fair if I make predictions re the Golden Globes, the BAFTAs. Of course, Phil only went and fell ill, so he wasn't around to actually do that at all. So, you know, direct the entire schedule for that side of things.
Poor Phil.
You can relay to Phil, Lily, that we thought it was most inconsiderate of him actually falling ill over Christmas and therefore, you know, ruining the whole sort of midweek drive schedule. Sorry.
I kind of would agree.
Yeah.
Oh.
Exactly. No. It's focus on the whole thing. Hannah, have you got any questions, queries, or delights you'd like to share with Lily Holliman? And not just about, because I think we've spent a lot of time, as you'd expect, with respect to Fuzz. Curiously, this is just a by-the-by, I was intrigued by the fact that I seem to have had exactly the same impression on my face earlier in the afternoon, the bemused look with respect to another sound in Nick's vision in Studio One, as I actually had when I was actually doing the York Maze, holding up a calendar with Dick and Dom back in the day. You know, sorry. In case you're wondering, Lily, Dick and Dom are legends in the British entertainment industry because they were in the bungalow.
Yes, they were at the BBC when I was there.
Bogies.
Did you meet Dick and Dom?
Yes, I did.
Bogies.
I said hello.
I'm so jealous.
I didn't get a full-on conversation, but I saw them.
You don't want to go that
far. They're the ultimate children's TV show.
Eva MacDonald has actually stated that now she's interviewed Dick and Dom, her world is complete. She's done Dick and Dom, she's done Chico Time, and of course she has the awesomeness of the Chuckle Brothers.
Oh, I see. Chuckle I like Brothers. The Brothers. Yeah.
None of these things have translated to America. So for the last few minutes, Lily's sitting on the other end of the line, thinking, "Are they just British? Is it just this just the thing about British, etc." So Hannah, now we've actually sort of sorted that thing through. Perhaps you'd like to go back to that interrogation side of things that we're talking about.
Interrogation sounds a bit mean.
Yeah, but you're a professional journalist. You know, you can go for it.
Professional journalist. I don't police interrogate. I inquire.
Lily, just to help this, Lily, could you make sure you're sitting with a light beaming into your eyes at present? So, like, get a sort of a lamp or something and actually stare into the light as Hannah sort of goes through.
Yes, the Ludovico technique.
Yeah, exactly.
Force
them open. You know, it's what Anthony Burgess was writing Clockwork Orange for. Off you go, Hannah.
Well, I was hoping to have a little light-hearted chat, but, you know. Well, I was wondering, I'm currently doing a story for TV about New Year's resolutions, and it's got me really interested in finding out what people have done, because you have the generic ones, like get fit and, I don't know, eat healthier.
Stop drinking, things like that.
I've spoken to a few people, and they've had some interesting ones. I was wondering, do you New Year's resolutions, or have you ever done them, and do you have any interesting ones?
I do have interest in them. I think it's important for them to be really specific. Some years I'm just general, and it just there's no reason to even bother. For me, I have a couple of things. I would like to get a book a play in New York City.
Ooh.
I think that would be a good thing to do. And I would like to get a commercial.
Oh, okay. That's some very different.
Actionable, achievable, all within the goal. Your life coach, who went to the same school as you, would have been proud of those, I would have thought.
Oh, yes, she would have done. Oh. I've spoken to a life coach to get opinions on what makes a good New Year's resolution to keep. And actually, that's sort of along the lines of what she said, is that when things are vague, or they often things such vague, like get fitter, one, people don't commit to it, and two, if it means a big change in your life, so sometimes when people say get fit, go to the gym, they don't account for having to take that time out of their day and different things, and so you just end up not doing
it. And if you like, you can take away her anonymity, give her a free plug, because that's one of the perks of being a midweek driver. Mm. You can actually say to her, not only was she a fabulous interviewee, I actually overheard it, not that I necessarily wanted to, but I was actually working in a separate office at the time.
I
was saying all of it, and I thought, I recognise that voice. Yes, Hannah. But I didn't want to burst out, so I sort of waited until it was finished, you know, and sort of photobombed the whole thing.
I mean, generally speaking, I think we should just skip 2018 altogether and move straight to 2019.
Oh, whoa.
Because, I mean, come on. Enough of 2018 already. You know, it's been enough.
Yeah, 20.
And, you know, I'd like to stick it to the man.
Well, I mean, who would have thought we'd have that reaction 24 days into the system? Would you like to name check your life coach?
Yes, I will. She's called Nicola Elwood, and she is a Master Executive Life Performance Coach. You can find her on Facebook at Coaching for Performance Excellence, and she's a very lovely lady.
Now, earlier, as I say, with the wonderful quote, it is a bit of an issue that I think Tessie actually provided us with. It is a bit of an issue, I seem to have written down.
Oh, yeah.
It is a bit of an issue. I thought, actually, well, that's it. That's the quote of the show. A new feature we're introducing this year, which I think is kind of reappraising all sorts of things.
Okay.
But stick it to the man, Lily Holliman.
I mean, that might.
Possibly.
I think that's possibly.
Might,
words
yeah.
to live by.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Dangerous words.
I think she's overtaken me.
But that, do you think so?
I think so. I'm going to give her that one.
It is a bit of an issue. Stick it to the maybe it's a, which number would you like, Lily, between 2 and 26 to help you stick it to the man?
7.
Oh, number 7, as in Magnificent 7, as in 7 Brides for 7 Brothers, as in Hollywood Scenario, as in The Universe Today.
When in a hurry, step 1 for changing the entire world is falling in love with it as it already is. Same for changing yourself. You like the universe.
There you go. Simple, short, effective. Change the world, change yourself.
Love it.
Lily, it's been...
Now, speaking, Can I do a quick shout out?
Yes, you can.
Of the world as it is right this second in Park City, Utah. Mm-hmm. Currently, a movie that I am in is screening at the Slam Dance Film Festival. It's called Funny Story, and it is, as we speak, people are watching it in the Treasure Island Inn on Main Street in Park City. Part of Slam Dance.
This is more than awesome news, Tessa.
It is.
Can we have the title once again, Lily, so I can actually start finding details about that?
This is called Funny Story, and you can follow it at Funny Story Movie on Twitter and Instagram. It stars Emily Bett Rickards, who is in the TV show Arrow.
She's actually Arrow's best friend. She's the crazy girl from Arrow. She's the person who's Felicity from Arrow.
Yes.
Emily Bett Rickards is she's got the honor of working with the awesome Lily Holliman.
Wow.
Lord above.
Yes. This is all very exciting.
Is it directed? It is. It's directed by Michael J. Gallagher. We have that as the direction.
Yes,
the
patron saint of Lily Holliman, Michael Gallagher.
A tragic comedy about a well-intentioned father who inadvertently wreaks havoc on the life of his estranged daughter. We've got Matthew Glynn that's actually there. And look, there we are, Lily Holliman as Moon.
Oh, Moon.
Moon.
I like that.
Moon. This is awesomeness personified. Mm-hmm. How can you say you need to stick it to the man when you actually, you know, with 3 minutes to go, you know, I got yet another bombshell working through that. We will be saying that we wait and with great anticipation to see Funny Story. It's an awesome scenario that's coming through from that point of view. Of course, Lily, if any of your cast wish to join us as subsidiary members of the Midweek Drive, feel free to do that. Tessa, last two questions for Lily, please.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us?
Very much so. Thank you again for joining Team Fuzz.
That's all right. It's our pleasure.
It's the way forward. In case people have just tuned in, Team Fuzz is Team Fuzz Aldrin.
Yes.
And that's all about the feline friend that we've come to know and appreciate over the years, who's had a bit of a tough time.
She has.
But where she will on our side, all will be well in the end. And that's great. We have Avicii featuring Rita Ora coming up in a matter of seconds from now. But what is Lily's second and concluding question on this... the Midweek Drive for January 24th, 2018, where I can say in California it's going to be an awesome Wednesday, and we'll find out more about that when Phil Leonis connects with us tomorrow morning. Who knows? Maybe Tessa could wake up in time. Maybe she could join us on the Midweek Drive for the morning. Maybe Shaley McKenzie will. Maybe it'll just be Phil and myself. I don't know, because Gabriella's out doing another sort of bits and pieces here. So we'll just wait. I've given up with Hannah on the morning because she's got TV on a Thursday.
Yeah, she can't.
It's
all day.
But we will be putting those questions to Phil Leonis about the directorial thing. It'll be interesting to see how he responds to the Star Trek Writer's Guide.
No, definitely.
That's a tease ahead. Off you go, please, Tessa.
Yeah. Lily, will you return to the show again soon?
I would love to return, thank you.
A round of applause for Lily Holliman. It's all just awesomely wonderful. 2018 is great. It's everything's fantastic. Can we all say, live long and prosper? 1, 2, 3.
Live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper.